The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I thought that before kind of going further with Anapanasati, with this practice of mindfulness of breathing, to kind of start over again in a little bit way, maybe a little different way, and stay more with the basic, most basic aspect of the practice. And over these weeks that I've been doing this, I've offered a variety of maybe subtly different ways of being with the breath and breathing, and different ways, little different each time. And it isn't that you have to remember all those ways, but rather maybe some of them work for you, inspire you in some way, and it can be a basis of how you practice. And so the wider range that I give, perhaps the more likely you'll find something, and maybe you'll piece together parts of it, the subtle different ways of being with the breathing and work with the breathing and the meditation and breath. And I also wanted to kind of just stay real basic today, rather than moving further along the steps. As I said, I think yesterday, in some ways this we're going through slowly, in some ways we're going through it very fast. And you know, maybe it would be ideal to spend a year going through the steps. On Monday, you know, we'll start and I'll go a little bit further, and the next stages of it, next steps of it are quite fascinating or very, very significant for this working with this meditation practice. But before we go on that way, I wanted to maybe take some questions from you. We've been doing this breath meditation now for a few weeks, and maybe it would be nice if you had a chance, a few of you had a chance to ask some questions, and if you can put them in the chat. And then I'll try to respond, and maybe the questions that I pick out of the chat, hopefully they are relevant for many of you, and be interesting to kind of have some, at least interesting for me to get some feedback or some hearing about learning a little bit about the kind of questions you have, or challenges you have with it, or joys you have with it, or something. And the ways, you know, if there are a lot of chat questions, sometimes I can't really follow them in order and they're in place because they passed by so quickly, and I try to do a little bit that way, but maybe we can think of it more as I'm pulling questions out of a hat than doing it in sequence. So someone said, I experience anxiety, there's no question, but it's interesting that anxiety is I think it comes from a Greek word to choke, and to not really be able to breathe fully. And so it's kind of working the edge of where the breathing is held or resisted, or is sometimes can be helpful with anxiety. Kind of expanding it, relaxing that. How can this help with severe chronic pain? It might not help. I mean, I can't promise you that this will help. But there are plenty of people who find that breath meditation can help with severe pain. Certainly, I've had lots of severe pain in meditation, but not chronic, but certainly severe at times. And one of the surprises is to discover that it's possible to feel joy and pain at the same time. It's possible to be calm and feel pain at the same time. It's kind of like two different sides, two different parts, different aspects of our being. And often if we identify too much with the pain, or we're too preoccupied with it, or too caught up in it, then that influences kind of the inner state of how we are. But if we don't identify too with it, or aren't too preoccupied with it, it's there, and we don't ignore it. Then our inner state of our emotional state, our mood, and all that, doesn't have to be tied to it. And so the inner state can be peaceful or calm. And that doesn't necessarily make the pain go away, but it creates a different context for being with the pain, so that the pain isn't the primary influence on us, but there's something inside which is an influence that might actually influence the pain in some way. I've also, when I've had severe pain in meditation or in life, I sometimes have just breathed through it and around the place of pain. And it depends a little bit probably what kind of pain it is, but sometimes just breathing through it and or with it, I don't identify with it so much, and there's a little sense of relaxation, a little sense of something releases then, and if nothing, what releases is that my preoccupation with it. There's much more that can be said about pain, but for now. Have you experienced all 16? Sure. sometimes I've experienced them sequentially, one to the other, usually, but sometimes it's more random. You know, I sit down to meditate, and I find myself some points, different points of the steps, or I'll jump ahead, or it seems like I go through quickly, and one of the steps becomes more the predominant one for the day. And what does it mean when the body disappears? And there's no question mark, so that's already disappeared too. Generally, when the body disappears in meditation, it means we're concentrated. It means the thinking mind has become quiet enough that that we're not conceptualizing about the body. It turns out that it's a little hard to imagine, you know, if you have never experienced it, but it turns out that a lot of the ways in which we experience the body is mediated through our thoughts and ideas, through the activity of the mind that constructs the body. And so for example, with eyesight, with seeing, we have all these little photon light particles travel into the eye. They get turned upside down in the eye and go against the retina. And then there's these electrical signals, the nerves, that send these signals up into the brain. And then the brain reconstructs the signals into something which is a simile of the world out there, the world that was seen. And sometimes that reconstruction is not accurate, as when, you know, you see a twig on the ground and you first see it as a snake. And or I've seen people in the distance in a crowd, strangers, but for a moment I thought it was a friend of mine because there was enough similarity, and then I filled in the blank to kind of see my friend, and then I looked more carefully, and no, it's not my friend. So the reconstruction process is an activity the mind does. As the mind gets calmer, it's not reconstructing so much. And as it doesn't reconstruct, it's not taking the signals or doesn't have the signals from the body to reconstruct, and it just and it feels like the body's disappearing. And sometimes it disappears entirely. And I've actually sometimes thought, had to open my eyes in meditation to make sure that I was still here because it just felt so, you know, empty. Sometimes there's an intermediate stage where the mind is still reconstructing sensations, but it's not really doing it accurately anymore. And so sometimes people's in meditation, they'll feel really like they get elongated, like they're about to touch the ceiling, or they feel really squat. Their hands feel like they're getting really big. Usually it's not particularly, unusual. It's just kind of little perceptual distortion. And it's usually a particular stage. And then when people go deep, it also doesn't last for too long. And then after a while, the capacity to settle and get more concentrated settles in, and that perceptual distortion stops. Is it important to follow the steps in order? Like I just said, no. Sometimes it's helpful to do so because it can help the concentration, just you're on task and you just kind of do it. And sometimes it's not to do it on task, to do a technique and kind of follow something that makes the mind too busy. And sometimes what happens is we start with the first one. We just start with breath meditation and getting settled in. And then rather than following this, implying and following the steps exactly, we're recognizing as we deepen the practice, we recognize the steps. We recognize where we are. And because we can recognize it, maybe it becomes a little fuller, and we can let it become fuller and more complete. And then it just on its own, it moves into the next step and into the next step. And I prefer that way rather than kind of intentionally moving ahead when, you know, is it time to move ahead now? It's more like you do your practice and you just kind of allow it to unfold in its own way. And then sometimes it jumps around. It doesn't have to be the same linear steps. How to work with controlling breath. This is really common. I think the most useful thing to do is not worry about it. And don't be bothered by it. Allow yourself to have a controlled breath. And you can cultivate just as strong mindfulness and concentration with a controlled breath than with a breath that's not controlled. It's not the breath that is the main issue. It's really the main issue is the quality of the attention you bring. Also, if you're not bothered with it, you're more likely to get out of its way. When we're bothered by a controlled breath, we actually, in some subtle way, reinforce it, and it makes it more difficult to let go. Also, it can be very interesting to become a connoisseur of the controlled breath. Just be content to have a controlled breath, and then get to know it really well. Like, where exactly is the sense of control? Where is the tightness, the resistance, the pushing? What are the emotions that are connected to it? Are there anything emotional? Any beliefs connected to it? Just really get to know it inside and out. And sometimes that, really getting to know it, sometimes is a little trick because after a while, focusing on it that way directly disarms the control. And sometimes you discover something interesting that needs to be relaxed and released. Then it becomes easier to do it. So that's one of the things I would do. Another thing that I've done, you know, I've done so much of this over the years that I've, depending on times, I've done different things. Sometimes when I had a controlled breath, I imagined that I was bringing my attention from the back forward, like going in through the back door, my back rib cage, and just feeling it in the back rib cage where there's very little sense of control in the back rib cage. And I felt the breath there for a while, and then that kind of relaxed the control in the front. And then I slowly move my attention forward, gingerly, without kind of triggering the control. I have a challenge in the out-breath smaller and belly tight. Your suggestion observing the end of the in-breath at the end of the out-breath is helpful since I do get anxious there. So any thoughts about that? I think a little bit same as with the control. You know, it's very, very significant just simply to recognize and observe what we're actually doing. And there's a tendency when we see something about ourselves to have judgments or reactions or think it should be different. But don't underestimate how very significant it is that you're just observing it and seeing it. And it might be all you need to do. And I've had all kinds of ways in which, you know, I've been anxious or tight in my breathing, controlling my breathing, all kinds of things about it, that I just allowed myself to feel it, know it, and then just continued with the breathing, kind of like the breathing is just a massage for it. And I find it interesting that as a massage, some point in the in-breath is more like the heart of the massage, and then like pushing it and then relaxing. Sometimes the top of the in-breath, sometimes the end of the out-breath, depends what's going on. And just kind of like be with the rhythm, and find a way to be really content, like you're in it for the long term, like you're not trying to fix it, you're not, you know, concerned about it, not just, you know, just recognize, oh, it's unpleasant, it's tight, it's controlled, there's anxiety, and now just breathe with it, you know, we're going to be friends, and just breathe and breathe, and that kind of attitude sometimes is a very effective way. To over time, the things just settle without us being involved in all kinds of mental preoccupations, and that often just kind of stir it up even more sometimes. Yes, let's do another Zoom soon to chat with Sangha. Yeah, we'll do it. Maybe we can do it next week. It depends a little bit about, you know, it depends whether I have time. And right now I have a number of things I'm having to take care of in my life that makes it a little harder. Any idea for trauma survivors and disassociation? Sometimes I may think I'm concentrated, maybe I'm disassociated. Yeah. I mean, certainly trauma survivors have their own path and the care that's needed for breath meditation and for meditation in general. And it's a noble path. It's a dignified path for people who've had trauma to work through and work with their trauma in meditation and all that. But it often needs a little different kind of attention than the kind of the basic usual instructions that I would give. What's really good is a lot of compassion and a lot of care, a lot of generosity to oneself, and a lot of patience with it all, and permission to not have to go headlong into the trauma or the fear or something. It's fine to be at the edges of it, and it's fine to avoid it, or it's fine to breathe with it without fixing it or doing anything with it. So you can find exactly, or to pull out, when trauma responses arises in meditation, a very helpful skill to develop is to kind of end the meditation or kind of come out of that state and revive oneself or come back to normal a little bit and develop that skill. So there's confidence that as you go into it, that if you really wanted to, you could come out. So at some point, if you want to explore and go further with the sensations of trauma, that you do so with a lot of confidence that at a moment's notice you can pull yourself out. And maybe there is dissociation, and sometimes it's not a crime to be dissociated, so it's okay to within reason, and so if it just happens in meditation. Maybe it also has a helpful function. Sometimes there's a break, or there is a kind of relaxation that can happen with some disassociation. So not to be in a hurry to make it wrong to do that. And then, but if it starts being a problem or you suspect it is a problem, then, the focus on the body, I find, is one way to kind of work through disassociation, because dissociation is more often than not, I associate it with not being connected to the body. And then getting professional help, I think, is good. If you really think it's a big issue, it's really good to find a professional help. And there are now, in some areas, therapists who know about mindfulness and Buddhism and meditation, and they can be particularly helpful for people meditating. After the 16 steps, this would be the last one. After the 16 steps, would you make letting go the next theme? Yeah, that certainly can be. But we'll see that letting go is built into the Anapanasati. And so next week we'll get to the end of each tetrad. There is some quality of letting go, in the family of letting go. And so we'll see next week when we get to the eighth step that has letting go. And the first step, the end of the first tetrad, is relaxing or tranquilizing the bodily formations. And that's in the family of letting go. And so at the end of each tetrad, there's a letting go kind of quality. So we'll do some of that here. Well, thank you for your questions. And I'll read the rest of the questions, and so I get some sense of your concerns. And I appreciate this chance to be this way with you. And I look forward to next week and continuing on this process. Thank you very much.